From our studios in Cuenca, Spain, I'm Kate Jetmore with The Listen, the podcast that encourages community, cross-cultural dialogue, and open conversation. We're thrilled to bring you the third and final conversation in our series focusing on writers of young adult fiction. In today's interview, we'll be talking about inspiration, taboo topics, and the importance of the creative arts in these critical times. My guest today is Michelle Reynoso, an award-winning author of YA urban fantasy. Her books have been seen in over 7 countries and praised by Kirkus Reviews, the Book Life Prize by Publishers Weekly, Readsy Discovery, Writer's Digest, Online Book Club, and Reader's Favorite, as well as being lauded by Writer's Digest as exciting and refreshing. She's a member of the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators, the Independent Book Publishers Association, Wordsmith Studio, and the 88 Cups of Tea podcast and community. Michelle is a graduate of NYU with a BA in Theater Arts and is also a reviewer at NetGalley and Readsy Discovery. Welcome, Michelle. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, let's start with your trilogy, The Girl, the Pendant, and the Portal. I believe the first 2 volumes have already been published, and your readers are eagerly awaiting the final installment. Can you give us a taste of what the series is like, what it's about, and who it's for?
Sure. The Girl, the Pendant, and the Portal is YA urban fantasy. And really, it is, when I liken it to 2 different comp titles, I would say it's Stranger Things mixed with I Am Not Okay With This. And then mm-hmm. I sprinkle a little bit of The Last Airbender on top, just for a little seasoning. But really, it's it follows this main character whose name is Faith, and she is really broken at the beginning of the story. She just lost her mother, and she had to move to a new town with her brother. And then we watch her become this kick-ass heroine. We are in for the journey with her. And I think that is part of the fun of following this, because you get to see where she starts and where she ends up and where she's continuing to go in this trilogy. And then she's also dealing with her brother gets abducted, and she's dealing with this enemy that's kind of coming after her. So we kind of follow all of that. And it's really meant for readers that are 13 to 18 years old. And there are readers that are younger than that. And I also have readers that are older, because there's a huge adult crossover there as well. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. That's in a little nutshell.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And thank you for that nod to, or invitation actually, to adults to check your books out. Because, you know, I think a lot of times adults think, well, that's not for me. That's going to be kind of, you know, babyish, or, but there is some amazing young adult literature out there that is often even better than literature that's meant for adults. Wouldn't you agree?
I totally agree with that. I would say the majority of what I read now is YA. I read outside of that as well, but there's some great, great literature there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, Michelle, you and I first met, and I had a little nod to this in your bio at the beginning, in your intro. We first met when we were both studying drama at New York University many moons ago.
Yes.
And as actors, we told stories by representing works that had already been written by other people. But here you are now as a writer. You've taken a completely different perspective when it comes to, you know, how to express yourself as an artist. Talk us through, you know, how you came to writing as opposed to acting, and a little bit about your creative approach and where your ideas come from.
Okay. The interesting thing is I was actually writing since 6th grade. I mean, since I was 6 years old, since like first grade. So I think the root really is storytelling. It's been a foundation of my life since, you know, I can't even remember first grade, but my mom was amazing in keeping all this work that I used to work on. So I wrote my first book when I was in first grade. And then I wrote a play with one of my best friends when we were in third grade and acted it together. So it's incredible to look back and see that for all of these years, that storytelling, whether it's theater and acting or whether it's writing, has been a big part of my life. And I don't know what I would do without it, to be honest with you. It's really been integral.
Were you writing while you were studying theater? Has that been sort of a through line in your life, or did you sort of step away from it?
I kind of, once I got hooked with the acting bug, I kind of stepped away from it, which was weird. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of following a new way to tell stories, which I incorporate a lot of what we learned at NYU into the writing that I do now. Mm-hmm. And the process kind of brings me to the idea of, you know, where do some of those stories come from now that this is a different way of telling the story where I have control over what's being written as opposed to just recreating those words. And there's a lot of interesting places where stories come from. And I think one of the main places that we look at is whether we're a reader or a writer or we're taking in any kind of arts, we come to it with our own experiences up to that point. Mm-hmm. So, you know, different places we've been, you know, our relationships, all of those. You could have five people that read the same book and yeah, they're going to have the core element of what they've read, but they're all going to have different interpretations in there based on their experiences. And that's the same thing as a writer. We bring our experiences to the stories that we tell. And so I think that's one of the main kind of sources of where stories come from, is what we bring to it. Now, on the other side of that, if you look at somebody like Carson McCullers, who is a great American novelist who was writing when she started writing when she was 19 years old, I think her first book came out when she was like 23 or something. And her stories are so complex, and her storylines, and she's writing about stories, about characters that are so much older than her. So it can't just be about experience, because she wasn't writing from a place of experience. So then there's other places too, where you're going to have influences into story and elements of story. So if you look at research is another great way, and you might think, research is just for nonfiction, but it's really not. It can be for any type of writing. I mean, when I was writing the first book in this series, which was N, which was published in 2018, I actually audited a course that talked about energy and the science behind it and how energy is not, it never can go away. It has to go when energy is stopped, it goes somewhere. Mm-hmm. And that's a big foundation of this story, because the main character, Faith, is understanding there's this other world that she is becoming, her connection is being explained. And not only that, but she has this power that she is connecting with at the same time. And that power is being able to take energy from living organic things and translate it like you would a language, and translate it into other physical things. So auditing this course was the research I needed to kind of have that rooted in some kind of reality, because it's not about teaching that, but it's about making it plausible. You don't want it to be, you know, so out there that a reader is like, this doesn't make any sense, because you're going to lose them at that point in the story.
Right.
So the research is important.
How did you know that you needed that, Michelle? I mean, did you start writing the book and think, oh, I don't think I know enough for this to come off as, you know, that as me being an authority figure on this subject, and then you did the research? Or did you know it from the beginning?
I didn't know it from the beginning. I did know that as I was writing and getting deeper into this idea of energy, and I mean, it started as a very basic idea. You think, you know, it's a big part of like yoga and meditation and all of that, where you know there's aura and there's some kind of energy out there. And I didn't know enough about it besides just that basic. So as I was writing, and I find research comes a lot when I'm in the middle of writing, and I'll know, wait a minute, what does that mean? What are the implications of that? Where could it go? Mm-hmm. And another big question that I always ask when I'm writing is, what if? Mm-hmm. And it's really something that has made my writing much more full, because there's a scene also in the first book where this main character, Faith, and her best friend, Kiara, are supposed to meet up, but Faith is grounded, and she's not supposed to go anywhere. But Kiara drives 2 hours to come see her. The brother turns, Faith's brother turns her away. And in the first version, I was like, okay, that's nice. Faith goes up to her room, she's angry, Kiara drives away. But then I had to say, what if they didn't follow the rules? Mm-hmm. You know, so it gets you out of kind of that, because I create a kind of a story map when I start a project, and it gets mm-hmm. you out of that story map. So you're not stuck into this idea of they have to go along this straight line. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So research and what if are just really key. There's so many other places to get inspiration.
You started answering this question by talking about personal experience.
Yeah.
And then you said, well, and if you need to go beyond that, then we're talking about research. Now you're talking about what if. What about inspiration? Where does mm-hmm. that come into your work? Is there an element of inspiration in your work, or would you say that it's more about sort of routine and discipline? Tell us about how you work.
I think it's both, because I think if you're showing up for your work and your mind is always kind of open to different things that can inspire that work, then it does become a kind of magic, because you're so ingrained in what you're working on that when those epiphany moments come, you're ready to listen to them. Mm-hmm. And I actually had 2 of those epiphany moments, not last week, but the week before, which are amazing when they happen, because it gives you like a whole other direction or level or element to your work. And one was I was doing a writing with some of my fellow writers through the 88 Cups community. And in the middle of that, I was just like hit with this idea that was so incredible. And I was like, oh my God, I have to explore it. And then 2 days later, I was walking on my lunch break and another idea came. So I think by showing up for your work and being open to it, that creates the environment for magic to happen.
Mm. It sounds like what you're saying is, it is magical. It is yes. inspirational, but it doesn't come out of the blue. It comes after you've, done the work, you've yeah. laid the groundwork there.
It is. And there's another part of that too. And it's something that we learned in acting school. It's a way that keeps you open for that, but also ideas come from, and that's observation. You know, mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember, but we always had to have a notebook. We always had to write notes. It was almost like classwork. We had to turn in this notebook of what we saw that we could incorporate into our acting. And mm-hmm. that's another element of where story and ideas can come from, but where also inspiration for the stories can come from by being observant and open to that. You know, I've heard amazing conversations that I needed to write down word for word, because if they weren't exactly worded the same way, it wouldn't have the same feeling to it, you know, mm-hmm. or locations or any of that. So that's another part of that inspiration and story ideas and all of that kind of mashed up together.
Oh, wow. It's so rich. And I'm excited to go even deeper. We're going to take a brief pause, but we'll be right back to hear more about Michelle's experiences as an author. Back in a second.
Listen is sponsored by RAF, cutting edge cuisine in a traditional setting. For a look at the RAF dining experience, visit rafsanpedro.es. That's RAFFSANPEDRO.ES. This is Kate Jetmore with The Listen. If you're just joining us, my guest is Michelle Reynoso, author of the trilogy known as The Girl, The Pendant, and The Portal. I'd like to talk for a moment about YA as a genre, young adult fiction. When I was a kid, I remember Judy Blume being very cutting edge. Mm-hmm. She talked about getting your first bra. She talked about getting your period. She even talked about masturbation. I even remember some kids weren't allowed to read her books. So they were kind of, some people were sort of under the radar with reading her books.
And I don't really recall any other author who was kind of willing to go there with young readers the way that Judy Blume was. And I don't remember anyone calling her YA. So can you tell us when this genre really began to take off? It feels like it's a fairly new term, but let us know when it sort of began as a genre.
And before I do that, I wanted to let you know, I met Judy Blume once at BookCon, and it was the highlight of my life because, yes, you're right, she was the it for adolescent writing when we were of that age. Like, everybody wanted to read it because she somehow understood us. And I think that is a big thing about YA fiction, is that it can't be written that it's talking down. It has to be written on a level where you're connecting with those readers with experiences that they understand. Mm-hmm. So writing for that market, that readership, is not new, but calling it young adult as a category or a genre or a readership, even that has all kinds of arguments about it, but is, I would say, the late 1990s to early 2000s is when we really started seeing this development of this as a category unto itself. I mean, you go into a bookstore now, and there is a section dedicated just for work that is for YA audiences. Mm-hmm. You've got these heavy hitters, like you've got Cassandra Clare, you've got John Green, you've got Veronica Roth, and really you've got Stephanie Myers in Twilight, who was one of the first that really kind of blew it out of the water. And so it is fairly new, I would say, in the whole, you know, aspect of literary works to be its own kind of section, its own readership. And it's supposed to be meant for readers that are 12 to 18 years old. But like you mentioned before, there's a huge portion of readers who are adult. I think it's 38 to 40% of readers of YA fiction are adult readers that are outside of that 12 to 18 group.
Well, I think when I discovered the term YA was that I read a book by Rainbow Rowell. I don't even know how to pronounce her last name. Is it Rowell?
Yeah, I'm not sure either.
Rainbow, let's say Rowell. Hope I'm right. Sorry if I'm wrong. And she, I've actually read several of her books, but the very first book I ever read of hers was called Eleanor and Park, and it's one of my favorite books. And it is so honest and so raw and so, I mean, it just pulls no punches. And when I finished, I read somewhere or heard somewhere that that book was meant for young audiences. And I thought, are you kidding me? And then I thought, how lucky are our kids that there are writers out there who are there for them. How did you come to write for young readers? Was it a decision that you made, or did you just discover that was your style? Or
it's interesting, because when I first started writing this trilogy, I've been working on this trilogy since 2003, believe it or not. The first book took me about 15 years to write. And it was writing that first book. I first started writing it with characters that were, you know, 20s, late 20s. It was almost like a Friends with a little bit of fantasy mixed in. And I wrote it through many versions, and it just wasn't working. And then I read Twilight. And, you know, people argue whether it's great literature, not great literature, whatever. For me, it changed my whole writing outlook, because I realized that my writing was better geared towards a young adult audience, the voice that I have as a writer, and also the pacing that I strive for. I mean, if you read the Twilight series, once you pick it up, it takes you from one chapter to the next to the next. There's a very, very purposeful flow to that to get you to the end. And that was something that I really connected with, and I wanted to make sure was in my books as well. My son was never a big reader, and I really appreciated the intent in a book of making sure that it was easy for a writer to go through the whole book without getting to a point that was like, oh, this chapter's really hard to get through, but I want to get to the end. I wanted that flow. And so Twilight was huge for me because it opened up my eyes to writing for young adults.
Mm-hmm. why do you think young adult fiction is so important? You know, we were talking about these kind of cutting edge issues that Judy Blume took on for us when we were kids. And, you know, she's still being read by many generations. Why do you think it's so important to push the limits in these books and to break down barriers in society?
Well, I think because this genre is speaking to people. I mean, they're people that are transitioning from children to adult. They're a really critical age where they are learning about themselves. They're learning their own self-identity. They're going through experiences that people don't necessarily go through at other parts of their life. And I think it's important that the boundaries are pushed somewhere. I mean, we have this problem in our society that we get very stuck in our ways. People do, you know, and when they've grown up in a certain environment, they often take on those opinions for themselves. If we have an outlet where people and kids and young adults at this point are able to read about experiences and identify with those experiences and know that they're not alone in those journeys, but also reading about experiences from other people their own age, it gives them a chance to really identify with things outside of their bubble, which I think is very, very important. It does deal with things that are very sensitive topics. I mean, you've got things like suicide in there, rape. You've got, you know, drug, alcohol abuse. I mean, you've got, especially with social media now, there's the whole, like, you know, fat shaming or shaming on any level that's different than yours. And these are all things that are dealt with in young adult fiction. And I think it's important that parents are really involved in that discussion with their kids. Because I think that we need to have those discussions in literature, in books, or wherever, so people can identify with that. But young adults are still not adults. They're young adults. I tell my son that all the time. He's like, I'm a man now. I said, you're a young man. You're not a man yet. Yeah. And it's the same. They're not adults yet. They're young adults. And we need to give them the support outside of that and the discussions that those pieces of literature can open up. We need to give them the support to be able to have further discussions and get resources on the actual topics that are discussed in those books.
I'm wondering, I suppose it depends, you know, on the author and on the book, but I mean, I think for some parents, the issue might be, oh, this book is trying to tell my kid that doing XYZ is okay, whereas for me as his parent, it's not okay. But I wonder if it's more an issue of raising questions. You know, do these books present a choice? And then the characters have to navigate, you know, some obstacles and, you know, so is that what you're saying, that these books raise questions and then the parents need to be present when those questions come up with the child who's reading the book? Is that what you're saying?
It is. I think there's two sides to this. And part of that is the age group that this deals with is 12-year-olds and 18-year-olds. An 18-year-old in general is going to have a much higher maturity level than a 12-year-old. And I think parents, that's why parents need to be involved and know what your kids are reading, because I wouldn't let my 12-year-old read Sarah J. Maas, for example, because she has explicit sex and she's marketed as YA. For me, that might not be appropriate if I know that my child is not at a maturity level or an age level that I would want exposed to that yet. Not saying not ever, but maybe at that particular lower end of the YA, being much more aware of what the kids are reading. And if they are at a maturity level, then being able to have discussions with them. I mean, when Jay Asher came out with 13 Reasons Why, whether the book or the Netflix series, I mean, there was huge blowout all over the place because a lot of people didn't feel that their kids were right to learn about suicide as an option. You know, you don't want your kid, like you said, to think that suicide is an option to bad things that are happening in your life. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, unfortunately, rape is a part of in our society. I was listening to my son's class today. One of the things that we get to do now that they're, you know, having class from home, and his health education class was talking about a teacher's experience with a roommate who was raped in college, you know, and all the blowout that happened with that. So the kids are exposed to this, whether it's their experience or a friend's experience, and there's going to be discussion. So as parents, we need to know what they're reading, and it will open up discussions that maybe were not there before. They might not tell you that their friend went through an experience, but if they're reading something and you start talking about it with them, I think it creates better bonds between parents and kids. I think that's what we're looking
at. It sounds like an amazing tool for that parent-child relationship. And among parents, as you said, there can be a variety of opinions about what's appropriate and what's not appropriate. What about in the YA community? What about writers of YA fiction? Is there a debate there about how far should you go and how far is too far?
I think it's really going to be up to the individual writer. There are tons of discussions about it. You know, I have a boundary for myself of what, when I'm writing, I have to say that I've kind of toyed with the boundaries a little bit. And for me, it's a personal choice about what boundaries I won't cross when I'm writing. But I think that there is big discussion between writers as far as defining the genre for the lower end of the age group versus the higher end of the age group. But on the same token, I mean, we don't want to, this is free speech and this is the ability to connect with these readers. And, you know, I really, really think that a lot of writers believe that it should be the parents getting involved and having those discussions versus saying that these certain things cannot be written about in a YA category. So yes, there's lots of discussions. There isn't going to be an easy answer, just like what happened with the music industry. I mean, we went through this with the music industry, with lyrics and especially with rap music, and, you know, it ended up being about labeling. And I don't think that we should be saying certain things cannot be written about, but we need to make sure that parents have the resources to know what their kids are reading and have those discussions with their kids. Mm-hmm. And writers need to just make the decision of what they're going to write and what they're not going to write.
Right, right. Michelle, we're going to take another short break.
Yes.
And we'll be right back to continue our conversation. It is such a pleasure to share our interviews with you each week, and your feedback means the world to us. If you visit our new website at thelistenpodcast.com, you can let us know which episodes you're enjoying most and what you hope to hear in the future. I'm also hoping you'll subscribe to our podcast. When you sign up and rate and review your favorite episodes, it helps widen our audience and bring more people into the fold. You can find us on social media and check out the Listen blog, also available on our website. Once again, that's thelistenpodcast.com. We're talking today with Michelle Reynoso about her career as a writer of YA fiction. Michelle, before we get back to some more questions, why don't you take a moment to let our listeners know how and where they can find you?
Oh, great. The best place to find all of my links, there's two really good resources. One, you can go to my website, which is www.michellereynoso.com. It's MICHELLEREYNOSO. Or you can go to campsite.bio/Michelle Reynoso. And I'm on Twitter, Goodreads, Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest. I've got book trailer links on there. And you can also download a free sample of the first two books in the series. So if you want to just experience what the books are about, it's a free download and you can check those out. The links are there as well.
Oh, great. That's wonderful. We will, at the very least, we'll put your website on, we'll put a link to your website on our website, And when we might put some of your social media up there as well, but people will be able to find you through our website. Great. I was going to say these are strange times. it's hard to know how else to describe these last 6 months, but there is just so much change in the air. You know, the coronavirus all over the world. I mean, there's no one who's not dealing with that. And so I'm curious, given this backdrop of all the things that are going on in the world, what do you see as being the current role of both reading and writing and the creative arts as a whole?
Oh, that's a great question. And I think that the arts are more important than ever. I mean, if you look at some of the statistics that are out there, people are reading more than they were before, the 6 months before COVID hit. And I think people are really looking for an escape. You know, it gives readers a chance to kind of put the stress of all of this behind for a few minutes. I mean, in the beginning of the pandemic, I mean, I found myself just looking at the stats over and over again, like, why would I want to be doing that? But it was this trying to find understanding, and the only thing that was available was just trying to understand what was going on in the world, and people didn't know what it was, and some kind of control, you know. So we get our wipes and our face masks and our sanitizers and our Lysol, and then what, you know? What do you do? There's nothing you can do after that. So I think that reading is a great creative outlet to just escape for a little while. On the writing side, I couldn't write for March till June. I couldn't write. And it kind of put my whole schedule, you know, out of whack. But I would try, and I would just be so, there was so much uncertainty. I think that was really the worst part, is the uncertainty. And then the worry, you know, I have a young son who has asthma, and worrying about my mom who's far away, and a neighbor across the street who has some medical issues, and we were helping. And all of this just crowded the brain so much that I couldn't wedge enough creativity in there. And then just connecting with some other writers who are having the same problem, we kind of just slowly eased back into it. And it also has helped tremendously to be writing again, because it does give me a sense of control in so much uncertainty, a creative outlet. And it gives me a place for an hour a day. You know, I try to write about 1,000 to 1,500 words a day. And that time that I'm devoting to writing, I'm somewhere else. Yeah. You know, I am creating, and I'm making characters, and I'm thinking about all these wonderful places, and it gives my brain a break for a little while. So in this pandemic, any kind of arts, it doesn't have to be reading and writing. It could be painting. It could be looking at art. Because of the pandemic, I would say there isn't much of an upside, but if you could say there is an upside, there's been so much artistic material online that we can get from home. I've been able to see theater online. I've been able to hear music I couldn't access before. You know, workshops, and so many things have become available that weren't before, that give us that opportunity to kind of escape. So if there is an upside, I guess that would be it.
Yeah, I mean, I like hearing you look on the bright side. I definitely feel like there are silver linings to the many, many clouds that we see right now. I have a follow-up question for what you were saying about not being able to write for the first 3 months of lockdown. I'm just curious from my own personal experience, if this is how you felt, did some of that inability to write come from the fact that you were suddenly never, ever alone at home?
I think, yeah, maybe it did part of it. Because I do, when I write, I need quiet and I need my own space. Like, I can't have a TV going. And you're absolutely right thinking about it, because it would be, my husband was working from home, I was working from home, and my son was school from home. So from, you know, 8-something till 5 or 6, there was a lot of noise and meetings and stuff going on. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe you're right. And I think because I was also this transition of working from home, there wasn't this, the commute is a great place to kind of unwind. When I'm driving, I put on some music or listen to a podcast or whatever it is. And it gives me that transition. There wasn't a transition. It was get up, make breakfast, get on the computer, work. Lunch break, I didn't go out anywhere. We stayed home. Then it was like, okay, do I want to get back on the computer? You know what I mean? Like, there wasn't that transition. Part of it is, I think, what you're saying also. Yeah, it's interesting looking
and
back.
I don't know how much of that has changed for you, but I, in my case, I feel like I'm sort of, like, if anything has improved, it's simply because I've gotten used to it, you know? Actually, my husband is going to work now and my son is going to school now. So I do have some hours alone each day, which is a very good thing, as much as I love my family. Space is a good thing.
Space is good.
Michelle, I'm really pleased to get this fascinating look, thanks to you, into the YA world and into your specific world as a young adult author. My son, Lucas, loved your first two books, and he's recommended them to a bunch of friends, and he's super excited about the release of your third book. So can you tell us when, please tell us when that novel will be available, and also what we might be able to see from you in the future?
Okay. Shout out to Lucas. Thank you, Lucas. because of COVID, the schedule's pushed out a little bit. I was trying to get it done under a year, but it is coming up soon. The publication date is spring of 2021. So it'll be May 18th, I believe, is the exact day that it's coming out. So it's going to be here before we know it. Yeah. And it is because this is a trilogy. It's the end of the trilogy, so we're going to learn a lot of new things. We've got some new higher elements to Faith's power, and she's really having to decide between survival or mortality and whose that's going to be. So there is a lot, and a new character. There's a new character that's coming into this this story too, which is pretty exciting. And then coming up after that, I cannot wait. Actually, I've got 3 standalone projects that are all young adult that I want to work on after that. One of them is one is a dystopian fantasy, and it's about the government engineering death strategies for population control. So that one is going to be very interesting to write. And then I've got another one that is almost like think about alien invasion, but without the actual invasion or the battlefield. It's really about, I don't know if you're familiar with this fungus that invades, which is real in our world now, where it takes over insects and makes them into zombies. And the idea is that this alien race engineers it to affect human beings to kind of do all the work for them before they come to the world, to the earth. So that's another project that I'm working on. And then the last one is going to be, it's a very gritty teenage version of Cormac McCarthy's The Road. So a very dystopian kind of survivalist. So I'm really excited to finish the, you know, have the trilogy out and then working on these new projects that are very exciting as well.
Well, now you've placed me in a very difficult position, because if I tell Lucas what you've got planned after the trilogy, he will just like chew his nails to the quick. He'll be so excited. Because this is his, he loves science fiction and he loves your science fiction. So he will be very, very excited.
Yay.
Michelle, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show today. It's been wonderful to catch up and wonderful to hear about your work. And I just want to wish you and your family all the best.
Thank you, you too, Kate. Thank you so much.
Thank you. This concludes our series of interviews focusing on writers of young adult fiction. Many thanks to Jennifer Niven, James Bird, and Michelle Reynoso for their generous contributions. The Listen podcast is produced and recorded in Cuenca, Spain, home to the breathtaking hanging houses, medieval structures perched atop the city's surrounding cliffs. If you enjoyed this series, I encourage you to check out the conversations in Season 6, featuring writers Devorah Rogers, Brooke Berman, and J. Edward Croft. Explore the full archive at thelistenpodcast.com. There are dozens of interviews waiting for you there, all free and easy to access. I want to thank our producer, Lauren Lovett, and EJ Jetmore, who handles our social media. And many thanks to Lucas Munoz Jetmore for editing the show, providing tech support, and writing our theme music. I'm Kate Jetmore, and this is The Listen.